This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's time to be taken on a journey on the DJ Mac Travel Show, only on Plains FM.
Welcome to the show. I'm Douglas Mack, and this is the DJ Mack Travel Show on Plains FM 96.9. Okay, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is our last show of 2018, and we'd like to wish you all a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we hope you've enjoyed the stories and the travel and the interviews that we've done. And today's show is a reflection back on 2018 of the stories and the interviews, and hopefully jot your memory on what we've been talking about over the year. Also, we would like you to get in contact with us, if you possibly can, on contact me, Douglas, at identitytours.co.nz, and we'd be really interested in stories that you have to share with the people of Canterbury and Christchurch. So once again, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we'll see you next year. So our first show is about the Queen Mary, based in Long Beach, California. And I was talking to a lady called Brittany, who about 10 years ago, or maybe 8 to 10 years ago, checked into the Queen Mary, and she was talking to a person in an elevator, and we managed to ask her if she would record what she was about to tell us, and so here's what she told us.
I'm here with Brittany, and she works on the, you don't work on the Queen Mary, do you?
I'm the concierge for Wyndham, so I'm here on the Queen Mary, but I work for Wyndham.
It was a number of years ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in 2008. So in 2008, I was here just staying on the ship.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and so we were checking in.
Yeah.
And we were here a little bit early, so it was probably, I mean, anywhere from, I think it was 3 o'clock.
Oh, yeah?
And then we were cruising around the ship, so about 5 o'clock, we were on the elevator. And so we were in the elevator, and there's a gentleman standing over by the, where you push the buttons. He didn't really say anything. He had a captain's suit on, and we were like, hi, didn't say too much. And as my boyfriend and I exited the elevator, we looked back, and there was nobody in the elevator with us. So both of us kind of looked at each other, didn't say anything at the time, just kind of was like, both of us very looked at each other knowing that there was something that was a little strange. And then hours later, we kind of looked at each other again and was like, so what happened in that elevator? So we noticed that, you know, there was nobody back in there, but we were very apparent that there was somebody in the elevator with us.
Yeah.
And so years later, now that I work here, there's a gentleman by the name of Officer Stark.
So Toronto is a very large city, and it is a North American city. So it has a, it does, can, you know, Canadians wouldn't like it to say, but it does feel a little bit like America as such. It's got American cars and American architecture, but it is a North American city. So,
but that one was that one that still sits with me. Very, I will not take the elevators to this day.
I haven't taken any elevators either. Well, I took one to get here, but that was, I was not by myself.
Yeah. No, I'll take the stairs anywhere and everywhere that I need to go, but not take the elevators.
Right.
Because they're the true elevator since the ship was in.
Yes.
I'm going back and forth, so.
Yeah. So all the refits and stuff, they've never changed the elevators by the sounds of it.
No, but they do take the pieces from other elevators to make sure that that one continues to work.
Right. Yeah. Yes. There's a few that don't work.
Yeah, well, so there's this one right here, and then there's ones, there's the service elevators, and so there's quite a few service elevators that are no longer in service because of, they keep using the parts from those to make it work for all of the other.
Yeah, cannibalizing stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, well, thank you very much.
Of course.
Yes.
This one I'm going to talk about when things go wrong and they start going wrong and you still stick it out and you still do it and your gut feeling sort of starts telling you that this is wrong. So this happened 18 years ago. And around about at 11 o'clock and at night, the oil light. So we had the sails up, but we didn't want to go too far out into the Atlantic. It wasn't pleasant sailing. It was quite rough. So the oil light on the engine came on. And Howard looked at this and said, wow, the engine doesn't seem to be making much of a noise about it. It doesn't seem to be struggling. Oh, let's just, we'll keep going. So we kept going with the oil light on the engine. And it got rougher and the waves got bigger and it just started to feel a little bit uncomfortable. And then around about 2 o'clock in the morning, after we were doing a shift of 4 hours on and 4 hours off, about 2 o'clock in the morning, there was a bit of a funny noise. The engine sort of died and that was the end. And so that was the first start of our problems as such. So we continued to sail south and heading to Casablanca. And no navigation lights on because we had no engine to generate any power. And we would have to sort of just keep an eye out of what was in front of us. At approximately 5 o'clock in the morning, our skipper, our wonderful Howard, he decided, oh, this is not really a good idea. I've got a boat with a damaged engine. I'm sailing into Casablanca, which is a country that is classed as a third world country. I don't speak French, and I'm going to try and get my engine fixed. So we don't think that's a good idea, do we? And so the idea was, right, we'll turn around. So we'd sailed most of the day and most of the night to basically turn around to go back to where we started from. So the idea was, let's go back to Gibraltar. Gibraltar is British. Howard is British. We're a British boat. Let's go back to Gibraltar. So we turned around at around about 6 o'clock in the morning and started sailing back to Gibraltar on day and night. We were slow because we had no engine to help us move us along, so we ended up tacking backwards and forwards out into the Atlantic and coming back in again. And we arrived the following afternoon to the Strait of Gibraltar at approximately just on sunset. Now, the rules around the Strait of Gibraltar is it's a major and busy shipping lane, and so you have to follow the rules, basically, and navigation and the rules of the sea. And even though we're a sailing boat, we cannot expect that ships coming in and out of the Strait of Gibraltar are going to give way. And so the Strait has some rules. And one of those rules is that small ships or boats such as ourselves are to travel across the Strait and then get to the southern tip of Spain and then travel in the small boat lane. So obviously you need an engine to do that. That's something we didn't have. So we then travelled across the Strait and we zigzagged or sailed up the Strait over a period of that evening. Obviously, that's not an ideal situation because one minute you're looking on the port side and then you're looking on the starboard side for ships coming towards you. When we arrived at the Strait, there were three ships from memory that were coming out. One was a cruise ship, one was a car transporter, and the other one was just a container ship. And they were passing each other. The cruise ship was the one that was moving the fastest. And this is the thing that we were going to have to watch out for, is because one moment we'd be looking at ships on the port side of us and they'd be coming towards us. And then when we tacked and went the other way, they'd be on looking on the starboard side. And that took us all night to travel up through the Strait of Gibraltar with wind over tide. And it was quite rough and it was quite unpleasant. But anyway, Gibraltar was the game. We were going to go to Gibraltar, get our engine fixed, and away we would go. So we had some scary moments. We got close to some very large ships. One was a Kuwaiti supertanker. It was moving relatively fast, but it was pretty full, and so it didn't have a massive bow wake to it. But we did get quite close to that. Today's show is called Travel for a Purpose, and I have a person with me today. I know Therese. She's from the United States, from New York, not so much New York, but New York State, isn't it?
Yeah, New York State.
Yeah,
Syracuse.
Yep, cool.
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Mm-hmm. I know Therese because I've been working on losing some weight, and Therese is at City Fitness on Colombo Street, and she's my personal trainer, so she sort of pushes me along to do stuff. So, Therese, would you like just to tell us a little bit about yourself before we get into the main topic of our show?
Sure. What do I say then? Yeah, I'm a personal trainer at the moment, a personal trainer and a yoga teacher, although I'm doing more personal training than I am teaching yoga. And I've been in New Zealand for about 9 years, I want to say, on and off. Yeah, but I'm from New York. What else without getting into the nitty-gritty?
Well, that's okay. And then you travelled to the UK. So that was your first, right. When you were younger, you travelled, left home, went to the UK, and you studied an MBA in business.
Right, yeah. So my parents always pushed us to, well, they didn't push us to travel. We travelled a lot with our parents when we were younger, and I knew I wanted to travel the world. I think I told my dad that when I was like about 16 years old. He always brings it up all of the time, I think, in most conversations that we have, because I'm living so far away from home. When I graduated university, I graduated with a BA, a bachelor's in psychology from Lemoyne College in Syracuse. But I was living in New Orleans before that, so I was living pretty far away from home.
Right.
I just decided I wanted to do a work abroad. And at the time, I think it was about, I'd like say probably 2006, you could do, I think, 6 months in the UK if you were of a certain age. So I did that, and I loved it. Like, I loved being there. I worked at it was kind of like a, not Fresh Choice, but it was like a natural food store called Fresh and Wild. And I really enjoyed that. And basically, when my 6 months came up, I really wanted to stay. And I already had my bachelor's degree, so I thought about, well, why don't I continue? I know I want to continue studying. And I ended up going to a university fair, and there was an American school called Webster's Graduate School. And I started talking to them, and they were like, yeah, we can get you into the MBA program. We just need a little bit of work experience, and you have a bridging program to do that. And I was like, just really wanted to stay, and I thought, yeah, I could do an MBA. That'll be great. I could have my own business, yeah. And it's just kind of just went straight into it, really. Yeah. Got the student visa and then started doing that. I ended up Whole Foods, which is a major grocery store in the States, bought out Fresh and Wild.
Yeah.
And so they built this massive Whole Foods in Kensington High Street. It's still there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I started working there. And they actually had, like, people who've got an MBA, a program for them to excel on the way up the ladder in the Whole Foods. So I thought maybe that would be a possibility. So I kept that door open.
Yeah.
I ended up working at Whole Foods as like an oyster shucker in the oyster bar.
Right.
So I got really into oysters and things like that. And So from there, I met someone.
Yeah.
I met someone.
Who happened to be a New Zealander.
He happened to be a New Zealander.
Who lived here in Christchurch.
He
was in the UK.
He was in the UK because obviously you guys know that you can do the OE.
We've done that. Yeah.
So he was working in the, he was working on building the Whole Foods at the time. It was right before it opened. Their company was doing just a bit of the, of the labor.
Yep.
I think he really just carried around a tape measure. I'm not really sure what he did.
What he did.
Yeah.
And maybe followed you around as well.
Yeah, he did follow me around, actually. He did follow me around.
It is April 1998, and I was only 24. And my family dropped me off at Auckland Airport for a midday flight from Auckland to London, and we were flying via Hawaii, Honolulu, and Toronto, Canada, on an airline that actually doesn't exist anymore. It's Canadian Airlines. In 2001, Canadian Airlines was merged or acquired or purchased by Air Canada, which is still flying today. So that's an interesting sort of, it was an older airline. It was an interesting experience anyway. So, went to the UK. I'm on my OE when I was 24 Today's show is about music. Music that takes us back to what we were doing at the time. It's somewhat of creation of an anthem of our life, of songs and artists that we were listening to at the time when we were travelling and moving around the place. The plan, what we were going to do that year, what we were going to do that month, or even was that day. So, of course, you can't remember everything about what you were up to in certain times, and definitely April 1998. But the song that brings back memories for me the most is Madonna's album The Ray of Light, which was released in February of 1998, and I was travelling to the UK or the Northern Hemisphere in April of 1998. Other songs on the album was also The Power of Goodbye and Nothing Really Matters. There was also another song called Frozen, and they were released over the period of the whole year of 1998. And that was basically, I guess, my album of my two-year adventure in the UK. There are probably three points that I remember that I did, which sparked my song, memories of what we were doing. So, and when I hear the song, like The Ray of Light from Madonna, I sort of jump back to these three points. And so, if you imagine hopping on a Boeing 767 owned by Canadian Airlines, we flew from Auckland to Honolulu and then onwards. We only had about a two-hour layover in Honolulu, and then that night we were then flying to Toronto. And so we had a 12-hour layover in Toronto, and one of the main things I remember is, so stuck on the plane for so long, got to Toronto and went through customs, went through all the processes, and we basically went outside, and the electric doors opened on the main terminal and were hit by this fresh breeze of Canadian spring. So it was quite chilly, but it was really refreshing. So it was amazing. We spent some time looking around Toronto, went up the CN Tower, seen a massive traffic jam, and realised that we had to get ourselves moving back to the airport relatively quickly. Well, otherwise we'd miss our flight to onwards to London. So Toronto is a very large city, and it is a North American city. So it has Canadians wouldn't like it to say, but it does feel a little bit like America as such. It's got American cars and American architecture, but it is a North American city. So from there, we then travelled. Well, I travelled from Toronto to Heathrow on the Canadian Airlines DC-10. So at this stage, DC-10s were an ageing aircraft. There was still a reasonable amount around, but they were older. And we arrived in Heathrow, or in London itself, relatively early. So we were flying around in circles for about 40 minutes from memory in a stack. So there were aircraft above us and below us because Heathrow was not open. And also, the other issue was there was bad weather, English weather. And so we were waiting in a hold pattern out to the west of London for some time. After there was a big storm, there was a big rainstorm, and we came in and landed on a very, very wet runway. The landing was also very fast, and it wasn't what I was sort of expecting. So this was my first real long-haul sort of trip. I'd travelled around New Zealand a little bit, but not a lot. And to this day, I would say it was probably one of the worst landings I've ever had. From Heathrow, I then travelled by train, parts of the London Underground, to Liverpool Street, which is in central London. It's actually the business district. And that's where I met up with my cousin and her husband, who were working for Lloyds Bank, in the Liverpool Street CBD area. And then that's where I travelled with them down, and I stayed with my cousin down in southern London area, down by Horsham, and on the main sort of line down to Brighton, which is a nice part of the countryside. There's also Eastbourne and so forth around that area. And a few days later, I then decided to hire a car, and that's probably when my song really came into play a little bit, because I hired a little Fiat Punto and started exploring and driving around southern England and also parts of London. I got lost in London a few times. There's a few incidences where I didn't know where I was. And of course, this is the time when GPSs and Google Earth and all that sort of thing was not really readily available. But listening to Radio 1, which is
yeah, there's an interesting, it's a latest music comes out on Radio 1, so it's BBC Radio 1, and then they have other radio stations that are similar, like classic hits and so forth. Yeah, and that's when the song started playing. They were playing it about every hour because it was the number one, which is Madonna's Ray of Light. And also, the music that is playing in the background while I've been talking about my experiences in 1998 is the music of the top 40 songs in 1998 in the UK at the time while I was travelling. So if you like today's show and would like to hear it again, please go to plainsfm.org.nz and download the podcast by searching the DJ Mac Travel Show. Or if you would like more information and would like to talk to someone, maybe myself, then please call us on 0800 196633, and that's at Identity Tours here in Christchurch. Thank you and have a good week.